Joining me this morning by phone is U.S. Senator Mark Pryor. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you with us. I was telling you just before we went on the air that there's so much to talk about today, it's hard to know where to start. Let's let's start with what NPR was just talking about, the problem of Al-Qaeda and new branches of Al-Qaeda arising and making their names known, and terrorism obviously still a big concern for our nation and our world. And in the wake of this, in the midst of this, the House has narrowly defeated a proposal that would have limited the National Security Administration's ability to collect phone records. We've got this debate about privacy and phone records and these secret surveillance programs. Many Americans are very concerned about the scope of these programs, and yet it doesn't appear that Congress is going to do anything to rein in these programs. Do you feel there's cause for concern?
Well, there's no doubt about it that terrorism is alive and well all around the world, and there's no doubt about it that many of these terrorist organizations continue to target the United States, and that some probably have, in fact, we're pretty confident they have sleeper cells here in the U.S. And so what the NSA and others are trying to do is try to use various technology, various techniques to try to, you know, prevent bad things from happening and try to diffuse and break these cells, et cetera. So it is a classic balancing act. I mean, look, you want to protect people's constitutional rights, no doubt about it. Everybody's for that. But at the same time, we live in a very dangerous world, and I think most Americans, and I'd say most Arkansans, you know, are willing to do the thing that, you know, when you go through the airport, you've got to go through the metal detectors, even though they would never carry a weapon, they never do anything harm. But, you know, there's that teeny tiny percent that someone will, that chance that someone will. So same kind of thing with NSA. We need to make sure we have the proper safeguards on it, and there is a secret court called the FISA court that federal judges actually go and hear and have to, the CIA and the NSA and others have to go in and get a court order to do this stuff. So there is a check and balance built in. I think we should, in Congress, continue to watch it, and we should, you know, have oversight and keep an eye on it. I'm on Homeland Security, but we also have the intelligence committees in the House and Senate, and, you know, we just need to watch this very closely, and I think that some of the revelations have been very eye-opening to a lot of Americans that didn't know these programs were going on.
Yeah, and a lot of Americans are very strong in feeling that these programs are overstepping their bounds and that that more transparency is needed.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it, but at the same time, I mean, people feel that way, and they're justified, they're genuine, they're sincere in how they feel, and I have total respect for that. But at the same time, we all know that we're talking about national security, and if you give too much information, you pretty much defeat the purpose of the program, and you then basically say, we're just throwing in the towel and we can't do this anymore. And that's, no one wants to get there. So we're trying to find the balance, and I think that, you know, one thing you need to know is that these types of programs have gone on from one administration to another. You know, there's been a lot of political cartoons about how President Obama is just like President Bush when it comes to this stuff. And the truth is, but, you know, President Clinton's administration had some of this. George W. Bush has had some of this. Mm-hmm. And the technology has changed, and there's been developments and all that. But we've been, the United States have been fairly consistent on this. Of course, a lot of our allies don't like it because, you know, a lot of them didn't realize some of the things we were doing and, mm-hmm. you know, how it all works. So, anyway, we're trying to find the balance. We certainly want to protect people's constitutional rights, but we also want to keep people safe.
Well, I know last month we talked about the Senate passing a farm bill. We've been following this for a long, long time. The House last week, I believe, made a controversial move, splitting up the bill and just passing the farm provisions without the nutrition programs that make up about 80% of the bill. So how do you feel about what the House, how the House dealt with this and what happens now?
I'm disappointed in where we are in the farm bill. I must say, I think that Rick Crawford did the right thing. He supported the farm bill. Here he is, a Republican, one of my colleagues in the House, and Rick and I have a good relationship. But I think in the House delegation, Rick did the right thing. He supported the farm bill throughout. He reluctantly supported this breakup just because he wanted to get a farm bill done. But basically, I think it's bad policy to break nutrition out of the Farm Bill. It's been in there for decades. I think for 40, 50 years, it's been done this way. There's lots of good reasons to do it. By the way, you have to remember that when we have these nutrition programs like SNAP, some people call it, you know, CO food stamps, but things like school lunch programs, Meals on Wheels, things like that, we're feeding hungry people in this country, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. We're feeding hungry people, and we don't want hunger in America. And, you know, as we all know, and every one of your listeners knows this is true, for a lot of people in our state, a lot of children in our state, the best meal they get all day is the meal they get at school. I mean, you know, I wish it weren't that way. I wish everybody was getting good three square meals a day, and I wish that everybody had healthy, wonderful families, but that's just not the way it is in reality, and we see that a lot in Arkansas. You see that around the country. So I think that we ought to keep the nutrition in the Farm Bill. I think that the Senate's going to insist on that. Again, it's been the way it's always been done. I completely disagree with those House members that tried to break this up. I think they're basically jeopardizing the entire Farm Bill itself. And it's pretty much a soap opera right now. I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, really knows what's going to happen. And, you know, so we're going to try to continue to push it on the Senate side. And you have to remember that for Arkansas, agriculture is by far our number one industry. And if you think about your listeners in your listing area there in northeast Arkansas, it's true that most of them aren't farmers per se, but everybody knows the ripple effect that agriculture has for northeast Arkansas. Basically, all of northeast Arkansas is dependent on that. It's the anchor for the economy in that part of state. Look at what Arkansas State University does in the world of agriculture. And, you know, it's just there's so many ripple effects. So we need to have good, smart farm policy on the books. I completely disagree with what the House has done. I do appreciate, again, I want to say I appreciate Rick Crawford. I wish everyone in the delegation did what he did, but I do appreciate him.
What the House did, what does that mean for the future of the Farm Bill? Is this the direction we're heading in splitting off these programs from the farm programs?
Well, what happened is the House sent theirs back to the Senate without the nutrition title. The Senate immediately, I mean literally within a couple of hours, took it and substituted the Senate-passed bill and sent it back to the House. So right now the Senate bill is actually pending over on the House side. That's all kind of procedural parliamentary stuff between the two houses, but hopefully what that means is we will conference the bills, and hopefully what that means is we will see a farm bill with a nutrition title. The problem here on the House side, it's not even a Democrat versus Republican thing as much as it is a Republican versus Republican thing. They are really at odds within their own caucus over there, and they can't, you know, come to any kind of agreement. But anyway, I just think that it's critical that we get this done. I think it's irresponsible for the House to kind of have this, you know, my way or the highway type approach. And, you know, that's in order to get stuff done in Washington, you have to work with other people, and you have to understand various regions of the country have different needs, and certainly all over rural America, agriculture is the linchpin to everything.
Well, another thing that's concerning to a lot of rural Americans and people in our area, the House committee, one of the House committees has passed a plan to reform the United States Postal Service, which would drop Saturday mail delivery and phase out door-to-door service. This has got to have people in rural areas concerned.
It does have people in rural areas concerned, and here again, I promise you, I don't want to beat up on the House. You know, there's always this House versus Senate thing,
right,
and it's
right.
gone on for generations up here, and it's kind of funny sometimes, but I think it's just true. I think you see a bill like this postal reform bill that they're promoting now in the House, I think it shows that the House is just really out of touch with America. I mean, that is such a bad idea to, you know, the Postal Service is a critically important organization to the U.S. economy. We may take it for granted. You know, some people say, oh, well, you know, we now have FedEx, we have UPS, just let them do it. Let me tell you, FedEx and UPS, they do not want to, you know, charge someone, you know, 40-something cents to deliver a piece of mail from Jonesboro, Arkansas, you know, to Jacksonville, Florida in 2 or 3 days. They don't want to do that. They're never going to do that. the reason they can't do that is because they can't do that. And so we need this. It's up and running. The Postal Service is trying very hard to make themselves more efficient, and they've done a lot of things. I don't agree with everything they've done, but they've done a lot of things on that. But you have to remember now, with, say, for the example, the advent of the Internet, people are getting their medication through the Postal Service now, et cetera. And here's the other thing about FedEx and UPS. Let me just make one last point on that. FedEx and UPS, I love those companies. They're great. But a lot of times, you know who their biggest customer is, or you know who their, yeah, the biggest person they deal with is the Postal Service. Because a lot of times they won't deliver to that so-called last mile. They put that FedEx package on a U.S. Postal Service truck because they know that the U.S. Postal Service is going to every address in America. And so, believe it or not, that's who they contract with to finish a lot of their deliveries. So, you know, I just think the House is wrong on this.
Is there, you know, there are those that say that the way that the Postal Service has been forced to fund their pension plans is the reason that they're in financial hurt. Is that true? Or
That is partly true. That is, you can't say that's the only reason, but that is certainly a big factor. And that is an arbitrary thing that Congress did to the Postal Service. And, you know, we passed post reform in the Senate last year, and we sent it over to the House, and it died on the vine. But one of the things we did is we fixed that. We reconciled that to where we weren't going to have this arbitrary and even kind of punitive requirement on the Postal Service and on their pensions and also on their retiree health care. So we fixed that in the Senate side, and I hope the House will fix that. But again, it's, you have to really get inside those numbers and think it through, and I think the Senate did that. We passed this big bipartisan vote, and I'm on that committee. Our chairman and our ranking members, they worked very, very hard on this. Last year was Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins and several others. We all worked very hard on this, and we passed it through the committee, passed through the Senate floor, got over the House, and it just died. So I would hope that we would be able to pass post-reform this year, and I would hope it would look like very similar to what the Senate bill was.
All right, we're kind of running short on time now. You and Senator Bozeman have introduced legislation, I know, to help homeowners in Mayflower, Arkansas, who were affected by this ExxonMobil oil spill there.
Yeah, there's a provision in the tax code that basically it would allow them to take a deduction, I guess, for their losses. This comes into play with natural disasters. We just want to extend that to the folks in Mayflower. A lot of these folks, you know, this thing happened back in March or April. A lot of these folks are still not in their homes. They've lost a lot of their goods and their material possessions, and you know they're in an economic crunch. And to be honest with you, Exxon has helped some, but not completely. And now there's litigation. It's gotten messy. So what Senator Bozeman and I want to do is we want to just, you know, make sure that these folks qualify for disaster relief under the tax code that other people do. And we'll get it all straightened out. But this is a temporary relief, probably just a one-year thing. And it's just a very few people. I mean, it's a few dozen people. But we think it's the right thing to do. If they can show their out-of-pocket expenses, just like in a tornado or something like that, let's let them do that just this one time and, you know, hopefully help them get back on their feet.
Well, this was a pretty big spill and a big mess to clean up. And as you said, it's had some long-term effects on some of the homeowners in the area. I got to ask again, does this not give you pause in your support of things like the Keystone Pipeline?
You know, I've had a lot of folks ask that, and I've re-examined it, but the truth is that it really doesn't, because the pipeline, remember, this pipeline that burst in Mayflower is 60 years old, and now they've determined that it was the way the thing was made, and you know, how they did the seams and whatever else when they welded and all that. Well, now the technology is much better, the materials are much better, the maintenance on these are much better, and also they have better warning systems, and they can now, on the new pipelines, they can now shut them off quicker and shut them off in shorter segments, and so you're going to get a smaller spill. Look, if you have a pipeline, you're going to, every now and then, you're going to have a problem. I mean, there's no 100% guarantee that nothing's ever going to happen in the future. Things will happen, but I think the technology is so much better, the engineering so much better, you know, just the science is better. We know a lot more about pipelines today than we did 6 years ago, so I'm very comfortable with the with the Keystone. And also, you have to remember, we're going to be moving that oil one way or the other. A pipeline is by far the most efficient way to do it.
All right, just very quickly, student loan rates were scheduled to double this month. Congress has been wrangling over what to do about that. Now the Senate has passed a plan to link student loan rates to the financial markets. This could be good for now, but what about the impact on future students?
Well, that's the concern. It will be good now. Rates go down immediately, but then the rates will ride on the market. But the Senate bill caps the undergraduate loans at 8.25%. A little different rate for the plus loans and graduate loans, but nonetheless, undergraduate loans, 8.2%. Everything's capped at a certain level, and that's good. So it's going to ride the rates for a while. We all know that interest rates are going to go up, and we think that probably what will happen is for the next 2 to 3 years, students will be better off under this plan than what the status quo law is right now at 6.8%. After that, you know, we don't know. But the good thing is it locks in the rates for the life of that particular loan. One thing I really disagree with the House version of this effort is they would give you kind of a variable rate student loan. I think that's a terrible idea. I thought we'd learned something from the mortgage crisis that we just went through as a nation. Why in the world do you want to be variable student rates, student loan rates? I think that's a bad idea. So this locks them in for the life of the loan. But then the next year when you go apply, you may get a different rate. And chances are over the next few years they're going to creep up, you know, pretty much every year until the interest rates get back to a more normal level.
All right. Senator Mark Pryor, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Senator Mark Pryor joins us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.